Today, the US will officially launch its economic plan for the Middle East, which includes a global investment fund to boost the Palestinian and neighbouring Arab state economies. Senior White House advisor Jared Kushner, who's also, of course, the son-in-law of the president, will present the $50 billion plan at an international economic conference in Bahrain. The plan includes, too, a proposal to fund a multi-billion dollar transportation corridor to connect the West Bank and Gaza, but it doesn't offer any kind of political solution.
The plan would invest about $50 billion in the region. It would create 1 million jobs in the West Bank and Gaza. It would take their unemployment rate from about 30% to single digits. It would reduce their poverty rate by half. The political side and the economic side are two very robust efforts, and to digest both of them at one time would be very, very hard. Our thought was that it was better to put the economic plan first.
That's White House advisor and son-in-law of Donald Trump, Jared Kushner. But the Palestinians have already rejected the plan, and now former Australian diplomats are calling on the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, not to support this proposal from the White House. Anthony Billingsley is Australia's former head of mission in Damascus. He's a lecturer of international relations at the University of New South Wales. Anthony Billingsley, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
You, along with many other Australian diplomats, have signed an open letter addressed to the Prime Minister about the Trump administration's policy in the Middle East. What's your major concern, Anthony?
Well, I guess the big thing is that, as you suggested in the introduction, that there's no they've decided not to address the political issue, at least at this stage, although I think our assumption is that what they're trying to do is to suppress the political dimension. We've had, for example, a UN report back in 2016, which said that if Israel were to end the occupation, the economy would by itself double in a very short space of time. And so what we're suggesting, I think, is that, you know, all this stuff that is being talked about in this plan, peace to prosperity, is old stuff, is not going to work unless the occupation is removed. And so, you know, that's sort of underpinning what we're talking about.
Let's unravel the Kushner plan a little, because on the face of it, $50 billion fund set up to be spent on the Palestinian territories over 10 years. It looks positive. We heard Jared Kushner there talking about 1 million jobs, reducing poverty by half, and yet the Palestinians have rejected it immediately. What is the problem with this? Do you see this as a distraction, in a sense, a way to just actually end up America foregoing any support for a political two-state solution?
I think that's definitely what's going on. The plan, first of all, it talks about the potential to raise $50 billion, much of which it's expecting to come from Saudi Arabia and the Emirates and places like that. And it's talking about infrastructure. The problem here, again, is the occupation, where you have, for example, an area which is like a patchwork quilt. Small, poverty-stricken villages divided from each other by large highways connecting the settlements across the West Bank, for example, or where Gaza is locked off by a blockade and unable to develop. So you're saying we will, if you like, bribe you to stop pushing for a state if you will accept this money.
Yes. Now, Jared Kushner says, well, you can't do everything at once. Let's get the economic program set out and then we'll go to the political. But within the economic plan that they're talking about at this conference in Bahrain is this concept of a new transit corridor. Does that give the game away? That provides a sort of a corridor of connection between Gaza and the West Bank, but, you know, really doesn't take... doesn't look at any shared ownership of Jerusalem or reinstatement of Palestinian right to Jerusalem and a two-state solution?
Well, there's no reference to Jerusalem in this, and of course it's a central issue, and it's not insoluble, I think, as many people suggest. And it doesn't talk about a state as such. Much of the report talks about administration, governance, but again, it's not talking about a two-state solution. And, you know, as we say in the letter, Netanyahu, for example, has said on numerous occasions that there will be no Palestinian state as long as he's prime minister. He's determined to prevent it. Even if he were to change his view, we ought to talk about a viable Palestinian state. And as I suggested with the patchwork quilt idea, the state cannot be viable the way it's structured.
Anthony Billingsley is our guest. It's 21 past 8 on Breakfast. Anthony is Australia's former head of mission in Damascus. Hanan Ashrawi from, you know, a senior well-known in this country member of the Palestinian Liberation Organization's Executive Committee said in response to this, the issue is we are not in charge of our own land, our own resources, our own boundaries, our own airspace, our own territorial waters, our own freedom of movement or anything. And indeed, the situation of the people in Gaza is just, you know, it's appalling in those terms, isn't it?
Oh, most definitely. And these are things that the UN report identified. I suppose one of the most important things, which is not addressed in the Kushner proposal and is an essential part of any recovery, is the water issue. So most Palestinians live on an amount of water which is well below World Health standards. The water from Palestine goes into the Israeli National Aquifer and is then distributed around the country, except to the people who are living on the land where that water comes from. So if you haven't got water and you haven't got access to be able to move goods and products and people around the place, if you create a situation where people are dependent on the Israeli economy for menial work and nothing substantial, you know, we're not changing anything. We're just sort of tinkering around the edges.
So, Anthony, Donald Trump's final draft on the Israel-Palestinian conflict isn't due for a few more months. As we heard Jared Kushner say there, let's get this one done and then we'll come to the political paper, trying some kind of peace arrangement. The White House hasn't committed so far the longstanding US goal of a separate, fully sovereign Palestinian state. What are the consequences if Australia supports the Trump administration's Middle East peace plan? As you and the other diplomats say in this letter, for decades, since the creation of the State of Israel in 1948, Australia has sought to support international community's efforts for a two-state solution.
Well, that's exactly right. We have. We were there with 181, which created the two states and a customs union, 242, which ended the war in 1967, and so it goes through. What we've done recently, so for example, last year, we voted against six resolutions relating to Palestine and Israel, where previously we've abstained. And what we're saying is, we're not party principle, so we don't have to get ourselves deeply involved in this, but what we need to do is just to try to play the role of a constructive middle power, which will promote the interests of everybody involved. But as it is now, we're following along a line where the US has backed away from any sort of support for Palestine. It's ended aid to the Palestinians, to UNRWA. It has closed the PLO office in Washington and adopted a very hostile approach to Palestinian interests. Now, that's not in our interest. We don't need to be quite so radical in our approach. We can promote the interests of both sides through a reasoned and constructive approach.
Australia's foreign policy still maintains, as far as I can see anyway, commitment to the two-state solution. There was the moment last year, of course, when Scott Morrison, as Prime Minister, announced that Australia would follow the US in moving our embassy ultimately from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. That seems to have disappeared, that idea, that plan. But do you see any particular real signs of Australia actively moving away from our commitment to that international goal of two-state solution in order to support whatever the Trump administration comes up with?
Well, no, I haven't seen any statement saying that we don't support the two-state solution.
On the contrary, I think.
Yeah, but it's easy for us to say that, but then you look at our actions, such as the voting in the UN General Assembly, which seem to contradict that position. So we're rejecting resolutions, the question of Palestine, for example, which basically calls on Israeli withdrawal to the 1967 borders and the working out of a relationship between the two countries. And we're voting against that sort of thing. So, you know, there is evidence implicit, I suppose, which challenges our stated position of support for a two-state solution.
And meanwhile, just briefly, is this conference in Bahrain, can it be useful at all if the Palestinians aren't there? I'm not sure if they boycotted or weren't invited and the Israelis aren't there.
Well, the Palestinians decided not to go, and so Trump said he didn't invite the Israelis because of that. You've got countries like Morocco and Egypt and Jordan, etc., attending. Countries who are fairly ambiguous about their support for the conference. They're trying on one hand to be nice to the Americans because various reasons they need them, you know, Saudis and Iran, that sort of thing. But on the other hand, we just had 2 days ago a Saudi minister saying, we will accept whatever the Palestinians, our Arabs will accept whatever the Palestinians accept. So they're being torn by their need for American support. And the very powerful, despite the fact that Palestine has vanished from the current news cycle, from the very powerful commitment to Palestine amongst Arabs across the region.
Anthony Billingsley, thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Anthony Billingsley is Australia's former head of mission in Damascus and a lecturer of international relations at the University of New South Wales.